Listen and stream the only talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.
8:30 in Trinidad and Tobago. And at this time, as I said to you earlier on, we do have a special interview. Joining us, author of the book Beyond Indentureship, Indo-Trinidadian Entrepreneurs. That's Mr. Himraj Ramdat. Good morning to you. Welcome to our program.
Good morning and thank you for having me.
It's nice to have you with us here this morning. Just before we get into the nitty-gritty, let me allow you to familiarize my listeners with you. Tell us a bit about yourself and a bit about your book.
I'm originally from Pinal. Currently live in Canada. Really, my background is really in business, business development strategy. But I come from the bowels of the agricultural sector, rice, cocoa, coffee, etc., in the Pinal area. And therefore, my grounding is an agricultural base and business. So mixing the two together is what I am today.
Okay. Pretty interesting background. Today's Indian Arrival Day. And the discussions many times focus on the contribution of the East Indian community to Trinidad and Tobago's development. And one of the integral parts of that is business. Indian people have been involved in business. We have some very, very prominent names. Your book, Beyond Indentureship, Indo-Trinidadian Entrepreneurs. Tell us a bit about the book and some of what the book focuses on.
But first of all, I think you're very right. I think we've had a tendency in Trinidad in celebrating Indian Arrival or Indian Arrival Month or Indianness to focus on culture and food and dress, etc., and downplay the contribution that Indian businesses have played and continues to play in the development of Trinidad and Tobago. So my idea was really to focus on companies, family-owned businesses over the decades, try to link it from indentureship, because indentureship, all the Indians came here to Trinidad to work on the sugar plantations or coconut or rubber. Of course, they've transformed their lives. And how did they transform their lives is what I tried to look at in this book. I published and featured 33 family-owned companies. We actually did about 45. I traced the development of those companies, how they started, where they started, which sector they started in, and how did they grow, what were the challenges they faced, how did they overcome those challenges, and more important is how do they prepare their organizations for the future, especially in these turbulent times. How do you prepare your organization, your people, your families, your workers, to navigate this new norm? So that's what the book is all about.
So, well, I'm assuming that it's nothing secretive. We can identify the businesses that you've focused on and their trials and tribulations. Tell us about some of them. Go ahead.
I actually had a sectorial analysis of the businesses. What I did is I looked at, for example, the legacy companies like Jaleel that will be celebrating 100 years next year, companies like KC Candy who celebrated 100 years last year, and then you have the companies like Batu Brothers and Rahmat's, for example, has been in business since 1888 in Trinidad and is considered to be the oldest family-owned business operating within the entire Caribbean. And then you have companies like Sine Brothers in Sine Village. And Sine, he had created history by becoming the first Indian involved in road transport, bus transport from Sine Village to San Fernando. Same as Munan's in Rio Claro. So those companies that had begun way back in the 1880s and 1900s during indentureship, what I consider to be legacy businesses. And then I moved to companies like Energy, TN Ramnad, Damas, TOSL, and in construction, people like Kusal, Sami, Garib Das, Sriram Brothers. And then when you move to retail, you have people like Mrs. Bhagwan Singh, MS Food City, Prasad's, I remember this called Mart, Extra Food, Pennywise, you know. So in every sector that I've looked at, it allowed me to facilitate on each sector and the contribution they've made to that sector as well as to the country. I did it sectorially so that one can understand that Indians came mainly on the sugar plantations, but they have then moved on to lots of other areas of business across every sector, including energy and gas.
You know, one would not have made the link just looking on and having a discussion about businesses that were started just after indentureship and have survived. And for you to itemize them and for there to be so many, it's a real eye-opener. I mean, we hear the names, we know of the businesses, but we seldom think of the history behind them and the hard work and dedication that and the entrepreneurial spirit that would have forced some of these business owners to get into where they are now, to have this legacy operating for 100 years. That's quite an achievement for any business, to make a century.
So it actually shows that they were built to last, because they, you know, I think that they've had a lasting impression in the country. Mm-hmm. And if you take a deep dive into some of those companies and the brands they have created over the years, when you look at a brand like Sasha Cosmetics, for example, Sasha is in more than 90 countries at the moment, mm-hmm. and most probably more because of the advent of Amazon, where you can ship anywhere in the world. Products like Chubby, Jaleel is in about 65 countries with plants, physical plants in places like Saudi Arabia and India and South Africa and most of the Caribbean. So it is not about only what they've done here, but when you take a deep dive into those companies, you look at Caribbean Flavors, you look at Chatuk, you look at Happy Products or Chief, and you realize that these are brands that are global in scope and in nature. And it's also a proud moment when Trinidadians go across the continent, across the world, and see products made in Trinidad with brands that they recognize. And when you go behind the scenes, you realize 90% of these brands that are global are Indian-owned businesses. So, and we don't celebrate those people here. And it's about time we do.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the discussion points more and more to the stellar work that they've done and the achievement that they've been able to amass over the years. In analyzing, or maybe analyzing is the wrong word, but in compiling the information and the statistics and data on these companies, was there a common thread that you found in them that would have contributed to their successes?
Well, I think, first of all, the two aspects to that question. I mean, first of all, the common thread was the early days when land ownership provided a means of transformation. Because from the land, they cultivated cocoa, coffee, sugar, rice, peas and beans, and etc. And they were able to take those things to market and increase their income earnings. The other interesting thing that happened was that during the advent of oil, with the discovery of oil, they then was able to get royalties because they own a lot of land. In fact, Indians owned at the end of indentureship about 140,000 acres of land. So it meant that they were getting produce that took to the market, and they were getting royalties as well from mineral rights. And a few other things happened, like the extension of the train service into places like Rio Claro and to Pinal and Sipari and stuff, where they now linked the agricultural sector, which previously was never linked, to the town center, and therefore you facilitated trade. So now you can move products from place to place. So, you know, things like that helped to facilitate it. The second half, or the post-World War II period, it is education. Up to 1920, only about 20% of the Indian population was being educated. By 1945, it was about 40%. Today, and beyond 1945, it is 95%+. So earlier, the land was the transformational factor. Today, it is all education, intelligence, ability. But deep down, you still have the drive, the energy, the the tenacity, the strength, and to stay the course, and to stay within the family, and to stay within the family business. Like everything else, you have conflicts, but you have the innumerable ability to stay the course, to have grit and determination to do better.
Mm. For those of you now joining us, we are speaking with Mr. Himraj Ramdath, the author of the book Beyond Indentureship, Indo-Trinidadian Entrepreneurs. We need to take a quick break. When we get back, we've been speaking about the successes and the positives. We'll speak about some of the challenges that they had to face, to endure, and to get to where they are. Stay with us.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back. Continuing our discussion with our special guest this morning, author Himraj Ramdath, author of the book Beyond Indentureship, Indo-Trinidadian Entrepreneurs. The discussion already this morning has been a real eye-opener about some of the businesses. As I said, you know, you hear the names, you bandy them about, they've become so synonymous with us doing almost every single thing. You don't take into consideration the legacy, the history behind them. And we've spoken about the positives, the achievements. Let's speak about now some of the challenges that they would have been confronted with, that they had to overcome to get to where they are. In compiling the information for your book, what did you notice?
Well, I think, first of all, that's, you talked about common thread earlier. This is a common thread. Almost every company that we spoke to have had problems, significant problems, mainly for funding. But, you know, if we talk about, like Solo, for example, Solo, the original name of Joseph Charles was Saraj Mukherjee. No one will respond to his requests for information so that he can upgrade his plant. And what he did, became innovative, he changed his name to Joseph Charles. And of course, it was successful. And you go all the way through the list. Fen Mohammed could not get funding from the banks to buy raw material. So what he did, again, became innovative. He took a lot of artisans around the Marabella area, created businesses for them. They then became his supply source, while creating their own entrepreneurship. So it developed quite nicely because he got products and it allowed the community to develop. And this is why I think in the 70s, 80s, 90s, Marabella was the furniture capital of Trinidad. And then if you look at Dr. Indar, he tried to build a purpose-built hospital, first of its kind in Trinidad, and could not get funding from the bank. So what they did, he got 10 of his colleagues together, all medical doctors, who sign a personal guarantee so they can get funding to build the hospital. And it continues all along, almost in every sector. Any of these companies I pull, there is issues, but there was always the innovation. There was always the will to survive. There was always the family getting together and pooling their resources to make things better. Where, you know, you have the fantastic case of Jang Bahadur Singh with Caribbean Housing. The mother, way back in 1920, gave both her sons $90 to go and buy and purchase material on the streets and selling on the street cloth. One of them was a tailor, and therefore they started selling on the street, then created bought two machines and started selling uniforms. Today they have built West Mall, they have built and building Edinburgh Gardens, and have done most of the significant developments in Port of Spain. And you look at the whole of the West Moorings, the whole entire area of West Moorings, and that must be $2-3 billion investment. So right across the board, you find that there were opportunities, there were challenges, but they're always able to overcome those challenges because there was a commitment to make life better for themselves and their families. Mm-hmm. I think that's a fundamental area. I think maybe it's part of their makeup and their desire to create a better life for themselves, well, which is the reason they came here in the first place.
Well, it's a lesson therein that they did not allow that discrimination, because that's what it was. It was clear-cut discrimination. They did not allow that discrimination to throw them off or to stop them completely altogether. because and that decision itself to persevere in the face of that clear-cut discrimination is what resulted in them being as resilient as they are to all the other challenges that probably would have come.
Absolutely. And you know, the interesting thing as well, the assistance that they got from outside the family, you know, this two things has happened. One is that the bond that was created by the Jahajis spending together 4 to 6 months on a journey of a common purpose, coming to Trinidad, that has helped to pool resources to help people. But also in the case of like MS Food City, he when he started in Debe, he could not get product. He had no product. So he opened the store and there was nothing to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And there was Fung, the Chinese grocer who owned some other properties, provided products for them together with Joe Singh Pasta. So, you know, it is that ability to reach out. I mean, in the case of Jan Bhairav Singh, a lot of the help and solo they got from the Syrian community as well. So there was a common bond amongst the businesses in those areas, in those times. People were, I think everybody was struggling together, but they helped each other. And that's a big difference. And maybe it's a learning that we should take today.
We speak about entrepreneurial spirit all the time. And the discussions always encourage persons with entrepreneurial spirit, to pursue their dreams, their ideas. Those are some of where the greatest businesses and ideas come from. In today's society, do you think it's possible for persons to begin to achieve what some of these businesses have been able to, given what exists?
Absolutely.
Today?
Absolutely. And in fact, this is where my book fills that gap, because it's first of all, it's 33 case studies who demonstrated that companies never took no for an answer. There, nothing was impossible. The people who had zero resources, people who had just a need, a desire. So the book is a checklist for current entrepreneurs. It is a map for those who wish to get into business, because most schools here do not teach entrepreneurship, unfortunately. And there is very few cases, local cases, that you can read and demonstrate that, look, you don't need to be a Coke or Amazon to get into business. In fact, you know, way back in the 1880s, the women in Port of Spain, in Maraval, were all doing delivery of milk and hay to most of the owners of those homes. So they were doing delivery way back almost 200 years ago. You know, so it is, the book provides a roadmap to entrepreneurship. It provides a checklist for those who are in business to see what they need to do differently. How do they prepare for their futures? And I mean, there are one or two failures as well, not total failures, but failures. And therefore you learn from those as well. You know, when you look at people like Jairam Kisun or even Amar, that was one of the major risk takers in setting up a plant in Trinidad. When you look at Jairam Kisun and even the Moonan Group of Companies, that was like a shooting star, brightened up the skies and took the hopes and dreams of everybody, that here's a small guy from the country who was a mechanic in the family business, came into Port of Spain and got so many different contracts, created some very great opportunities. In fact, suggested to the government way back in the 80s to create a center near to Port of Spain, so that people can commute easier. You go there and then it becomes a hub, you know, so you avoid all this traffic congestion in Port of Spain. So it is an amazing level of creativity that is contained in the book. It's really a fantastic guide to help everyone who wants to get in the business, who are currently in business.
Well, apart from that, it's an account of the history of Trinidad and Tobago that, you know, you often get way after the fact, and not necessarily while things are up and running. And this is definitely something that I'm sure many people would want to get their hands on. Had indentureship not come to Trinidad and Tobago, and these businesses not set up shop, where do you think this country would have, can you even begin to suggest where this country might have been without the input of these people and these businesses?
Well, I think that's a difficult one to speculate. But what I would say, though, is that when Indians came to Trinidad, the country was on the brink of ruin. They had no money. Most of the estates were not performing, principally because they had no labor. And if labor was available, it was very expensive. But Trinidad in 1845, especially 1840s to 1845, was really only 3% of the agricultural sector was producing. And you have a country that 85% of the GDP depended on agriculture. So it was just not sustainable. At the end of indentureship, that 3% went moved to about 22%. So it'd been a significant difference in the land under agricultural cultivation. Of course, it was all augmented now with the discovery of oil, and therefore, as you know what has happened, there's been a complete switch from agriculture into oil, into energy and gas, at the expense of agriculture. And now you're feeling the negative effect of that.
Mm.
So it's a difficult one to say. What I would say, though, is that the Indians saved the agriculture sector then and now. And most of these businesses came here. I mean, everybody, these 145,000 Indians came as laborers into these estates. Today, they are the largest employer of labor in the service sector in Trinidad. And that is a significant shift, significant, because they themselves came as laborers.
Yeah, definitely. It's been, this is where we drop the curtains on our interview as we wrap up. Tell people where they can get your book.
It's right now available at all the RIK stores, all the Charans, Little Store, and NCIC up to the end of the weekend, I think it is. Paper Base in Maraval, Mohammed Bookstore. So I think we're trying to get it out as far much as we can. And I've been talking to many schools. I've done maybe 10, 12 schools already. And therefore, we are hoping more and more that because this, you know, as I said, when I did an MBA here, you couldn't get any data on local companies. And therefore, this provides, as we mentioned earlier, a checklist for entrepreneurs and for would-be entrepreneurs. So in speaking to the kids at school, Form 4 mainly, you can give them a sort of a career guidance to help them along the line. So, you know, but we're trying to get the book in everywhere we can. But really, I would like to get this into every household, because this is almost like a must read.
Yeah.
And it's very, 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 very affordable. I mean, because it's a not-for-profit.
Yeah. I want to thank you for being with us here this morning on Indian Arrival Day. I think this interview was an interesting one, an insightful one. And I look back as we look to the future as well. Once again, thank you so much for being with us here this morning.
Thank you very much. And let me say happy Indian Arrival Day to the whole community. And get yourself a copy of the book.
Yeah, definitely. And that, of course, ladies and gentlemen, how we drop the curtains on not just the interview, but our show for today. Happy Indian Arrival Day to each and every single one of you. Be safe on the nation's roads. You never can tell. The life you save may be just that of your own.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.